Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Pirates Podcast. Later, this is your program, one of your hosts. I am alongside and in honor to be in the presence of the North Shore 9 Beat Writer of the Year. Dun 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 dun. Alex Stumpf. And yes, that is 100% Rocky.
Doing a little victory music. Doing a little victory music to celebrate my fanboy award from the North Shore 9.
How does it feel, Alex? How does that feel?
Oh, man. I'm on the top of the world right now. To know that I don't have to go the rest of my life, that, you know, knowing that I lost the most prestigious journalism award that you could win in this city, I mean, it means a lot. It means a lot. It was the best thing that happened to me on Thursday, and I slayed the beast on Thursday and published that player development story, which people from a couple episodes ago would hear me, you know, talk about, you know, like, oh yeah, it's coming out next week. You fool, Alex, from 3 weeks ago. It takes a while. You could get a few more interviews. It takes a while to transcribe, write it up, but there it is. It came out on Thursday. Big piece about the Pirates player development. It's out there for the world, and I gotta tell you, that's a weight off my shoulders. I'll be honest with you, man. That took a long time to come together.
Right, and Alex, you know, it's funny because you see the finished product all the time on the site, any site really, no matter what we're writing about, and you don't really know what kind of goes into it because, you know, when you're covering the Pirates farm system, you've got people in Florida, you've got people in North Carolina. Right now, you've got people in Arizona, you've got Indiana, you've got Pennsylvania, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got Altoona. There are so many different moving pieces when you're trying to put together a story like this. And when you have guys from all over the place, it is really hard to coordinate. And it's not like we have the ability to jet set and go to Bradenton and get some interviews and go to Greensboro and set up interviews. No. It doesn't work that way, but technology has definitely helped. And when you start to put those things together, Alex has been talking about this. He and I have been talking about this for months and how this was going to kind of happen and it evolved. And finally, we get to see the finished product today, and it was worth the wait 100%.
Yeah. I mean, not to date anything, like the first interviews that I, well, except for the ones that I cite from, you know, a while ago, like it first started coming together in, it was still August at the time. So it is a long thing, but nobody wants to hear about the labor pains. They want to see the baby. And I'm glad the baby turned out, at least in my opinion. I'm proud of how that turned out.
So if you're just tuning in, Alex has had a baby and Alex has won Beat Writer of the Year Fanboy Award from North Shore 9. So I don't know how we can even get any better on this podcast, but let's go a little bit deeper into the Pirates farm system, because Alex and I have been covering it for quite some time, both for DK Pittsburgh Sports and elsewhere. And, you know, we've seen both regimes and they couldn't be any polar opposite when it comes to on the field stuff and behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's what really struck me doing those interviews, talking to John Baker, talking to Josh Hopper, and I hope this came across in my writing, is the genuineness, like true genuineness I felt talking to these guys. And you know what? 5 years from now, we could say, well, that was just a horrible, horrible decision. What were they thinking hiring these guys? I don't think it's going to be that, but it's a possibility that, you know, this could all just be a terrible gambit. But if it is, they'd be wrong for the right reasons, if that makes sense. Like what they are doing, especially with relationships. I really enjoyed talking to Josh Hopper in particular, like him talking about the 5 minute, you know, experiments. And like, I feel like that's something that you could use if you're a teacher, something you could use for a whole lot of just, you know, personal growth. Like if you could do it for 5 minutes, see if it doesn't kill you. See if you could do it for 10. See if you could do it for 50. It doesn't have to rely on baseball. And I think that was someone who commented that in the story. He said in the comment section, saying like, this is, you know, I'm getting stuff here that doesn't just apply to baseball. I could apply it to my life too. And I think that's something that both he and Baker and, you know, most of Pirates development in general would like this too. It shouldn't just be we're putting you in a lab. We're going to get your spin up, even though, you know, I would probably find that a little more nerdy and intriguing sometimes, but they're all people. I think that sometimes could be lost, and they want to emphasize that too.
The human element is so important in the game of sports and the game of life too, because we see these people on TV, we see these larger than life figures. We see and baseball, I think, is probably one of the realer sports. I think baseball and hockey, really. I mean, you know, if somebody plays basketball, you know, if somebody plays football, but baseball and hockey, you know, they're a little bit different. You're not bulky, you're not tall, you're just kind of an everyday kind of guy. And you know, when you look at the pitching, you think, hey, they're just going out there pumping fastball, off speed, whatever. But there's so much more to it than just going out there and throwing. It's the psychology of the game. It's really what makes it that much fun. And baseball is a lot like life, right? You get to have, if you fail 70% of the time, you're in the Hall of Fame. You're one of the best. That's if you fail 70% of the time. Nothing is like that. Other than life itself. I mean, yeah, obviously you don't want to fail 70% of the time at what you do, but you've got to go through trials and tribulations to get to where you want to go. In baseball, you can relate that to any sport, to any career. You know, as a teacher, it's funny. I use baseball as, you know, my go-to. Number one, because baseball is kind of my thing. But number two, it's so easily relatable because that's the stuff. If you can do it for 5 minutes, if you can do it for 10 minutes, that's the thing. You have to fail to have success. I think one of the things that the development staff and the farm system are doing the right way. I mean, we talked earlier about Jule Hanrahan and Ronzi Contreras. What do they want to see him do? They want to see him fail. They want to see how people handle adversity. And you mentioned in your piece about Clint Priester, mm-hmm. Priester goes out, lays an egg, battles back the next outing, and voila, it's all about overcoming that adversity. And while you might think it's okay, it's minor league baseball, it's high A, low A, whatever, it still matters, because when you've done it before, it's going to be that much easier if you have to do it again.
Yeah. And what Baker said, like, you know, one day there might be a wild card playing game where, you know, do or die, where we all saw the Pirates falter twice in those scenarios. And maybe Quinn Priester is going to be on the mound that day. Maybe he comes through right there, because Gerrit Cole didn't. Gerrit Cole didn't hit this year either for the Yankees. There's only so much you can take from practice, from theoretical situations. So only so much you could get from game situations. I think they're doing a good job balancing that. I think whatever Baker says, you know, ramp up practice, not you got to run 5 miles or anything, but we're ramping up the velocity a little more on the pitching machine. You know, we're going to be mixing in some more breaking pitches during, you know, batting practice. It's that small stuff. It definitely registered. You know, I put in Caden Smith and Ajiba's quote in that story, because I realized very close to publishing, like, wait a minute, I have absolutely nothing from Indianapolis in this story, and I feel kind of bad. But Indianapolis, we've talked about Jule Hanrahan and John Nunnally, and, you know, the great work those two do. So I don't feel too bad, but Indianapolis always kind of felt like not part of, like, what's really going on with the farm system right now. That was very much the table scraps left over by Neil Huntington, and all the young exciting players were in Altoona, Greensboro, Bradenton, you know, this entire season. So I put that in there, but I heard that from a while, like, you know, practice is different around here. You know, it's a little more ramped up. It's a little where a lot of other places, it's more casual, you know, just get ready for the game. You get your lessons from the game. It's like, no, we're not going to waste hours of the day.
Right. We often forget that baseball is a long sport. I mean, it goes from February all the way to November. And obviously that's the major leagues, but a lot of times, you know, that's the goal. Your goal is to get to the majors, and your goal is to get there and stay there. And I think if that's not your goal as a minor leaguer, you have to reevaluate your life. But we forget that, like, they have a lot of downtime every day, right? They get to the stadium early, get their early work, get their glove work in, whatever they need to do to get ready for the game. But the BP aspect, as much as it's great to see O'Neill Cruz just pelt balls into the river, maybe even hit the buildings downtown in Pittsburgh or roller coasters, there's so much more to it, right? You know, you talk about batting practice and really getting your swing, getting your A swing, whatever. It's so much more than that. And, you know, I saw that especially when Michael Ryan was in Altoona, just the different situations that they would go through pregame. And then obviously you've got, you know, Miguel Perez and just, you know, mixing that up. And when you mix that up and you have that ability to really just practice some game situations on a day where most other teams are probably just going through the motions of BP and monotony of the season, number one, it's going to keep your guys kind of energetic and focused, because it's not the same mundane task. Get to the ballpark, treatment, workout, whatever you got to do to get ready for the game. No, now it's, hey, well, we're going to work on this. We're going to work on breaking pitches. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to ramp it up a little bit. We're going to do some situational baseball. And I think that's really where growth happens, because it's a long year, you know, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how that translates, because this year, I think it is kind of the oddity, right? You have a year where 2020 people just spent time at the alt site, and it wasn't game like situations. It wasn't games every day or 6 days in a row, off day, travel day, whatever. It was workouts every day. And you can't really replicate what they went through this season. So with that said, you know, now I'm, because you did see the war of attrition, I think kind of got caught up to some people at the end of the season, late August, early September, because it is a long year. It's a grind. And that's not something that isn't known by them, by everybody, but you know, it's very interesting to see that. And I think it's going to pay off down the road. It might not pay off right away, but when they get to those situations, oh, this is what we did. The body has that muscle memory. Hey, listen, now let's get after it.
I think they got a good core here. I think Charrington has done a good job bringing in the right type of people, right people that are going to follow. There's a vision for all of this, I think, was my real takeaway from it. And not to say that they were all parroting the same answers, because you don't want just a bunch of yes men in it, but I the core being in that relationships and trust. I control F the word trust in that story and how many times it was in a quote compared to how many times I just said it. Like that just came up a lot. And I think that's something that they needed through all levels. Like what Mike Burrows said with, you know, I think the coaches that were around in 2019, I think that they have more, you know, room to spread their wings, to be themselves. There wasn't as much trust in that area. More decentralized control. It's different. It's different. We'll find out down the road how much better or maybe worse it is, but it's different. And it's different for the ways that they have been setting out for this entire time.
Right. And I mean, we talk about trust, and the biggest thing in a relationship is trust, right? That's not just coach player. That's person to person. That's, you know, in relationships, no matter what it is, whether it's you're in love with somebody, it's your significant other, whatever, or if it's even you're a fan, it's your baseball team. You want to be able to trust that other person. They want to trust you back. And when you talk to guys about coaches and they talk about the relationships that they had, like especially Mason Martin, he raved about John Nunnally. Many have raved about John Nunnally, and many have raved about Hanrahan too. So that relationship, that trust, I think things are working out the way that Ben Charrington wants them to. But now, you know, you've got to see the results in the field, and can they get back to the playoffs and where they want to go? That's the next step. They've built that trust, the relationship, they've rebuilt the farm system. Now it's cultivating that into winning baseball games again and being that much more competitive as a result of that.
read the article. I don't want to give it all away for free here in Podcast 4, so read it. I'm proud of the product that I put out there. We're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, we're going to shift to maybe the most unexpected development in postseason baseball this year. The podcast to be named later here on DK Pittsburgh Sports. He's Jared Brugger. I'm Alex Stone. Jared, we all know in the postseason, Major League Baseball likes to break out the high bouncers for, you know, just to get some tape measure shot home runs, let everyone see what happens. But we're seeing some more small ball this time around that we have in the past, especially with stolen bases. Like, I should have the number actually pulled out, but we're recording this on Thursday night this week, so because Jared's got some high school football on Friday, so we're a little off. But at this point, I believe it's 32 stolen bases across the postseason compared to 3 caught stealings. If it's not exactly those numbers, or if they've fluctuated a little since Saturday, it's like a 90% success rate with a decent number, decent volume also. So, Jared, I ask of you, is the steal coming back?
I think so. I mean, let's be real. It's winner-take-all time, right? Everybody wants to get that World Series ring, and you're going to do whatever it takes. If that means stealing a base and moving guys up, you know, play that small ball bunt. You know, I know it's the least sexiest thing in baseball, but
I'm not saying bunt. I'm saying stolen base. There's a difference between the two, Jared.
I understand.
I will never advocate for the bunt.
I will, however. But, you know, be aggressive, man. What's the worst that can happen? You get an out. Okay, well, you got your next guy up. You got to this point for a reason. You know, these teams are putting up some serious runs. And every run, every out matters. And if you're, I mean, they have access to everything at this level, because now you've got everybody in the organization, you know, looking up this certain data point. It's, you know, pitch time, how long it takes them to deliver the ball from any type of movement, you know, and pop times. You have so much more analytics involved. And hey, if you can use them the right way and use them the legal way, then good on you and good luck, because make them beat you, right? Make them get you out and make them make plays. And if it pays off, that's great, because now you've got a guy in scoring position, a base hit might score him if it's to the outfield.
Stolen base obviously took a hit. That was one of the casualties of Moneyball era thinking, because they realized, well, if you're not going to be successful about 75% of the time, 75% is basically the break-even point. It's not really, it fluctuates based on situation. There's a whole difference between being caught stealing at third for the second out of an inning compared to being caught at second for the first out. We could go into run expectancy matrices and probabilities and all that good stuff, but general rule of thumb is 75% ish is about right. So, what they looked around and like, well, we're not stealing 75%, so we're just not going to steal at all. And teams started to follow suit. This is interesting. I think that we're seeing such a spike in the postseason, and it's resulting in runs. Atlanta won that first game in the NLCS because of a stolen base. Like, when was the last time we could say a team won a postseason game, or the winning run? I can't talk anymore. Winning run was a result of that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's what makes it fun, right? This is every, like I said, every out, every run, every base runner, every base matters at this stage of the game. And you know what? You have to listen. No team has won by scoring zero runs. So you've got to put yourself in position to win. And if that means stealing, then so be it. And hey, listen, kudos to those managers who are, or those base runners who have the green light and getting it done. because guess what? That aggressiveness, it's going to pay off. And, you know, the law of averages, the more you do something, the more it's probably going to pay off. And what we're seeing, I mean, listen, a Rosarena, I know the Rays aren't in it right now, but he's still home. When's mm-hmm. the last time you saw that in a game? And especially a
straight steal of home.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I love the aggressiveness. You know, this is the most exciting time of the year for baseball. And you know what? And add a little flair for the dramatic with the stolen base. And listen, when you're running, once you get going, the pressure's on the catcher to get it to the shortstop or the second baseman, whoever's covering, or even third base. And it's on them. Make them beat you. And if they don't, you're one step closer, one base closer to scoring a run. And that's what you need at this stage of the game. You have to, I mean, it's going to sound redundant, but you have to score more runs than the other team if you want to get to the World Series. And by any means necessary at this point.
So let's apply it to the Pirates here. Like, I'm kind of assuming right now, even though we won't know until, you know, roster decisions are made and that process is still going on, I'm kind of penciling in at the moment Cole Tucker being the opening day shortstop, in which case, yeah, throw him into, give him some steal opportunities. Keep Ryan Hayes brought up at the end of this year that, you know, he wanted to, you know, try to incorporate that more in his game. You know, he's got, you know, an above average sprint speed. He could do that too. Reynolds, obviously, it could be someone. I could see Reynolds being a 2020 player if he so chose, if the Pirates decided to go down that path. Tucker Peter Macarno, the guy that they got in the Adam Frazier trade, will probably be in the major leagues for at least most of next year. Ton of speed candidate there. So there are candidates. Anthony Alford, as long as he's not running on Tucker Barnhart, should be fine. There are candidates that if the Pirates want to go through this, that's the way to go. Like, Shelton brought up being aggressive on the base paths, but, you know, didn't want to just apply it only to steals. Well, maybe it's time to apply it also to steals.
Yeah.
Or more so towards steals.
No, and I think it makes sense because, you know, you look at O'Neill Cruz, right? It takes him like three steps to get from first base to second base.
Yes.
With those long legs. Must be nice. I will never know what that's like unless I'm on stilts. And that's the thing, though. Like, you be aggressive. You know, leg out that double, leg out that single. Now, listen, they get rid of Joey Cora, so you're going to have a new guy at third base, right? So that's going to – I think it's going to take a little bit of ground because, you know, you don't really know what you've got. You got to make the right reads. And depending on who Shelton, you know, tabs as the new third base coach, you know, we might not know that until spring training. So – listen, go out and be aggressive. If that means trying to stretch a single into a double when the ball's hit into the gap, into the notch, and so be it. Or even off the wall in right field. You know, be aggressive. Be aware of the situation and do whatever you got to do. I mean, you got to put runs on the scoreboard if you want to win. It's that simple. And you do that by advancing bases. And if that means both stealing and being aggressive when the ball's in play, so be it. And go do it. And, you know, again, make them beat you. Make them get you out.
So what we're saying is the Pirates are going to finish 24th in stolen bases because everyone else is going to value this in the offseason. And Chris Taylor's going to sign a $100 million deal with someone. Be like, hey, we've got our 30 steal guy. I don't know. Maybe it's time to make the Herzog Cardinals go through. That's, again, going back to John Baker, whenever he was introduced, he kind of wanted to incorporate some more old school ideas, not really in, you know, always in player development, but in, you know, the type of players that they develop, not just three true outcomes guys.
So, right. Hey, listen, there's a beauty in the unanalytical game of baseball. You know, there's a beauty in all of those aspects because, listen, up until a certain point, they played the game without those numbers. They just saw what you see in the newspaper. Now you have access to literally, hey, did this guy go to the bathroom at 4 o'clock? Oh, did he go at 6 o'clock? Did he eat? When did he eat? What did he eat? There's so much data, but at the root of it, the game is still the same that was played when Babe Ruth played. You know, it's the nuts and bolts, the foundation of the game is still the same. So build on that. And guess what? Have some fun. Go out with a blaze of glory.
you know, I'm just going to close on this thought real fast here. Pirates are only going to be successful swimming upstream. They can't just go with the flow, because if they try to be the Yankees, you know, they're not going to win like the Yankees. It's just not going to happen like that. And as much as we rip on Huntington and the series, and the, you know, pitching down in the zone, three pitches or less, sinker heavy approach, it at least was different. Like, the heart was in the right place. They just were completely, it was just such an unbelievably bad hand to bet on. So that's all I have on that. I think make the 2022 Pirates the go-go Pirates. If nothing else, it would be very entertaining or interesting to watch.
Find your identity as a team, both with the lineup and in the field, and go with it. If that means you're an aggressive team, if you're a speedy team, go with it. If you're, you know, a pitch to contact team because you got some soft tossers, go for it. If you're a power team, embrace it. But stay true to your identity. Don't try to be somebody that you're not. And it might actually work. You know, the Pirates teams that were successful in, a couple years ago, I thought they stayed true to their identity. They were a fun group to watch, and they just, everybody did their role. They didn't try to step out and do their own thing. They stayed true to themselves, stayed true to the role, and stayed true to the team. And it paid off in 98 wins and a John Neese trade. Ugh.
And on John Neese, we are going to take a break. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Welcome back to Pirates Podcast, you named later. You've made it this far. I'm sorry. You had to put up with Alex and I for this long. But alas, we're here. Alex, what's on your mind?
Good win by all of Major League Baseball. Hopefully they'll have more concrete details soon about offering or providing housing to minor league players. That's long overdue in general. It's embarrassing that Major League Baseball wasn't providing that, but the Washington Wild things were. For their players, if you're not going to pay them a living wage, this is kind of like the absolute minimum that you can do of, well, we can provide housing. We can provide a way for you to live. Wow.
What a concept.
What a concept for a bunch of athletes that you were building your lifeblood of your organization around.
Yeah, and you know, every organization is different, right? The Pirates have chefs for everybody. And, you know, living yes. situation is it's something that the Pirates really have had no issues with. So I don't want to say it's a Pirates organization problem. It's a minor league baseball as a whole, because these teams aren't paid by their minor league teams. They're paid by the Pirates or paid by their major league team. And, you know, in Altoona specifically, they put them up, you know, Altoona has a Penn State branch campus. So a lot of times during the season, they have many townhouses or apartments open. So Altoona or the Curve are able to get them discounted rates for that. And they did that with the alt site last year as well, for those that weren't in the, hotel. So everywhere. And you see some of the bad horror stories. I think the Orioles were pretty bad with some of their living situations.
That Minor League Advocates page had a Cubs post of the week of just how horrible they were.
Yeah. And listen, that's, the shame of it, because these guys they make poverty wages essentially. I mean, it's brutal. And the only way that you're going to survive is, you know, obviously finding an off-season job. But again, you got to train. Your goal is to get to the majors. Where if you're bagging groceries at Sam's Club or Walmart, you're probably not going to be doing that. But unless you have you're a big bonus guy, then yeah. Okay. But
you know, so if you are.
Right, exactly. And the Pirates, I think, have done a great job of taking care of their players throughout their system. I mean, they have catered meals. They have, like I said, each team has its own chef, nutritionist. They do it the right way. as far as developmental goes. And now that Major League Baseball, for good, bad, or indifferent, is in charge of minor league baseball, they are obviously going to start making the amenities better. And that's going to be throughout the stadiums, throughout the entire experiences for these guys. And this is a step in the right direction. I mean, the fact that it happened, it had to take an advocacy page and much, much, much pressure is embarrassing, but at least this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, this isn't necessarily a dig at the Pirates. It's of the league. The Pirates, like you said, do well with the food and nutrition aspect of it. You brought up what they do in Altoona, Bradenton at Pirate City. They have rooms they could just live in, either in spring training or if you're just in the instructional league or a Marauder. There are options. There are ways to do that. But this, just across all of baseball, players shouldn't have to sleep in their cars. Players shouldn't have to, you know, have four or five people sharing a day's in room to make ends meet. This is just good for Major League Baseball, but they better follow through. They actually need to follow through and make this a sustainable thing, whether it's they actually build, you know, facilities like they have at Pirate City, or what they do at Altoona, where they actually have, okay, here's housing right here. So I'll end it with that. We need to still see more from the league, but it's good to see that they're coming together of, this is actually a thing that needs to be done, and that it's not attached to the CBA. That would be so incredibly crappy if that was, you know, just a bargaining chip for all of that.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, these guys have needed this for years. This isn't something that's just started to happen, but you know, again, Major League Baseball's got to step up, and can they step up to the plate, or are they just going to go down swinging or looking? And I honestly don't know, because I think that was kind of the trepidation when Major League Baseball took over. What was their relationship going to be? They come in and tell all these organizations, hey, listen, this is how it's got to be. Can't have bullpens on the field anymore. Yada, yada, yada. It's got to be padded walls, this, that, and the other thing. Well, these teams just got destroyed by COVID. Can they afford it? No, we're going to see what happens. But again, this is a good step. There's still a lot of work to be done, and can it be done? Who knows? But you know, kudos to the people in charge that have made this happen. Now, Major League Baseball gets to put their money where their mouth is.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast to be named later here on the TK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe wherever you find podcasts. Be sure to follow Jared on the Twitter at jpruger26, and to read my long form piece. I worked hard on that one. I'm glad it, you know, came through and was well received.
If you read Alex's piece and it gets a certain amount of views, I would say probably let's go with 10,000. If it gets 10,000 views,
yeah, I think it's a 13 pay. Right now.
All right. Well, if it gets to 20,000 views,
okay.
I will pay for Alex's next haircut.
There we go.
So please, you know, obviously the third segment is usually a free for all. So if you're even listening to this, great. And if not, I'm so happy for you. But you know, Alex is sitting here. He looks like a hipster he has a beanie on and long hair. I'm clearly jealous. I don't have any hair. I just have a little buzz for now, holding on hope as my hairline steadily goes away. But again, 20,000 views for Alex's developmental story. And I'll pay for his haircut, and I'll get him a good deal and get him something that makes him look a little bit better. Takes the hipster away. No disrespect to hipsters, but you know, Alex is just at the root of it, an analytical nerd. So, you know, gotta respect the nerdiness. Get him whatever he needs, because Alex deserves it. Like I said, like we talked about in the first segment, the amount of time and effort and pain and sweat and carpal tunnel that goes into stories like this, to see this and to see the final product is why we do what we do.
And I had a buzz cut whenever I started the story, and now I have this.
That's right. Alex's hair has grown 6 inches since he started writing the story at the beginning of the season, or just August. But again, we appreciate your listening. Please follow us on the social media. I remember when I had more followers than Alex. Salty still about that, but he has reached the big time before I did. I would say read my stuff, but you can find that on the Pitt page, the Penn State page, some Steelers stuff, and some Pirate stuff as well. So for Alex Stump, this is Jared Prugar. Thanks as always for listening, putting up with our BS. This is the Pirates Podcast, we named later on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. And we'll talk to you again next week.